Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday and welcome aboard, Carol. It's nice to have another voice out there.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here with you.
I like you emphasize the grandmother part too with love.
Of course.
As if you relate.
Yes, of course. Of course. So where are we off to today?
Well, I'm going to start with an admission that may not be of a surprise to my family and friends at all, but I love television. Mm-hmm. And I'm not embarrassed to say so. Even in this group, I'm not embarrassed to say that I have been a television fanatic all of my life since I was a little kid. And if you asked my husband, he would probably say to you, oh, she got her degree in television.
No shaming. No.
But it's my degree is not in television. Actually, my undergraduate degree from UC Santa Barbara was in communications. And although I did spend a lot of time analyzing television, because at the time it was seen as the great Satan, and so we watched a lot of television and analyzed its impacts and potential impacts on family and children, that was not what was on my diploma when I left school. It's not television. But it's funny because I carried my experience with television into my master's degree, because when I went back to school to get my master's, a lot of people were very focused on doing dream work and analyzing the dreams that they had at night and how that impacted their lives or what they were thinking or their dream, their hopes and goals. But I realized that a lot of the clients that I worked with as an intern didn't spend a lot of time thinking about their dreams. It wasn't something they remembered or recalled and they weren't interested. But I noticed that the one consistent thing about all of my clients, because I did in-home counseling, was that they always had the television on in the background. And mm-hmm. so I started asking my clients what it is they watch on television and why they enjoyed it. And that became kind of a dream work session, because we started recognizing that my clients a lot of times were really identified with the shows. Roseanne was very popular at that time, Roseanne, which is coming back this year. But Roseanne really spoke to a lot of my clients who were working class families and struggling with making ends meet. And there was humor in that. And then a lot of my clients were watching The Cosby Show at the time, and there were dramas. And so I ended up writing my master's thesis on television called Utilizing Television as a Therapeutic Tool. So I have this professional and this personal relationship with television that I don't think about all the time, not now, 25 years later, and I don't utilize television in my teaching that much. But every now and then, there are those water cooler moments. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Something that happens in the media, on television the night before, that everyone is talking about the next day at work around the water cooler. I mean, we don't have those as often now, because there are over 450 different original scripted shows on at any one time, along with sports and reality television. So it's hard to get enough people listening or watching at one time to have a real true water cooler moment. Can you think of any water cooler moments of the past?
Oh, Oprah's speech, I think.
That's current, though, but of the past.
Of the past.
Like the end of Friends, the end of Seinfeld, the end of MASH.
The end of MASH, I remember specifically, because it was the only one I watched.
Yes.
And Seinfeld, I remember that one, too, just hearing about it.
Or tight ends to the Super Bowl games, right, when there's something that a controversial call. Mm-hmm. But as I said, we don't have as many water cooler moments today. But as you brought up, we recently had a water cooler moment at the Golden Globes on Sunday night. And interestingly enough, the Golden Globes viewership was down almost 5%, less than 19 million viewers from last year. So they had lost viewership, but Oprah Winfrey's acceptance speech of the Cecil B. DeMille Award became an iconic moment, not just because of the people who watch on television, but of course, now all of the ways that we can continue being a part of modern events through streaming and YouTube. And if you didn't get a chance to hear Oprah's speech, and because kind of her rallying cry is so important in our conversation today, let's listen to just a little bit of the highlights of Oprah Winfrey from Sunday night at the Golden Globes.
For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men. But their time is up. I just hope that Recy Taylor died knowing that her truth, like the truth of so many other women who were tormented in those years, and even now tormented, goes marching on. It was somewhere in Rosa Parks' heart almost 11 years later when she made the decision to stay seated on that bus in Montgomery. And it's here with every woman who chooses to say, me too. And every man who chooses to listen. The new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say, me too, again. Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And that was Oprah Winfrey speaking at the Golden Globes on Sunday night, receiving her Cecil B. DeMille Award. And although there were less viewers of the Golden Globes on Sunday night, certainly a lot of people have been talking about her speech and how that impacted them and how it inspired them and how it can go ahead, may go ahead and inspire a movement. And so when I was thinking about today's show and where I wanted to go, I was thinking about, as I admitted, my love for television, for not just the inspirational piece of television, the potential to create a movement, but just also the entertainment part of television. Because I don't want to make it sound like I just am highbrow about my television viewing. I admit that I absolutely love plopping down at the end of the day, like a lot of other people. I look forward to getting a little screen time as much as a lot of people look forward to getting their glass of wine. It's a ritual for me. I work real hard during the day, and I love to have a few moments to kind of tune into something familiar, to have a laugh or a good cry or to feel inspired. You know, for me at this point in my life, my days feel a little incomplete without a little couch time or a little television viewing. And I'm probably very old school because I still have a television. And again, my children would laugh because it's a very old school television. But I love that ritual, that daily ritual of starting or ending my day with a few favorite shows. And I can remember this, you know, from early on, like early shows like The Monkees and The Brady Bunch. I love American Style. Again, I admit it was not highbrow television that was drawing me in when I was young, but I graduated into high school and started watching Saturday Night Live with my friends. We would gather at my house, and then over the years, you know, I developed a love for a lot of different sitcoms and dramas like Hill Street Blues and Saying Elsewhere and L.A. Law and, of course, into West Wing. And then, yes, I will admit to a few reality shows that I do love, like Survivor, So You Think You Can Dance, and some early American Idol. Like, I definitely know my popular television. And I don't spend hours, not like the average American viewer, which an elder American, 65 years and older, watch about 7 hours of television a day, and that's definitely not my habit. But there is that companionship, that comfort of having those familiar shows on in the background. But when I think about, when I heard Oprah speak on Sunday, I started thinking about how television has changed in the background of my life, that I had noticed over the last few years that some shows that I've watched really have stepped up how they are sending out social messages, how they are speaking about what's going on in the cultural climate, how they are addressing important issues. The most prominent one that comes to mind is the show Black-ish, because they have been addressing a lot of really serious cultural issues consistently. But also shows like Modern Family or shows like Scandal, Empire, Transparent. I mean, so many shows are not just subtly bringing in social messages, but really addressing real issues that are going on in the community every week. And I also started to notice, and this is where it gets a little bit dicey, so you're going to have to stick with me here. And I know that my daughter Kelly is waiting for me to make this grand admission, but I have, since I was in third grade when I first discovered it, been a viewer of General Hospital. If I'm going to be totally honest, I watched All My Children, One Life to Live, and General Hospital. And if you aren't a soap opera viewer, that means nothing to you. But if you are an ABC fan, you are still mourning the loss of Erica Kane and One Life to Live. But I still have General Hospital. And I'll tell you why. Yes, I get that it's a soap opera. And I get that it's dramatic and over the top. But if you study the history of soap operas in American culture, they have been at the forefront of addressing social issues and concerns well before the news media outlets addressed social issues and concerns. General Hospital was something I discovered when I was in third grade, homesick from school. So I'm sorry, Mom, but I did watch television that day, you said, just to hang out. And once I had my first moment of General Hospital, I have been able to tune in throughout all of my adult life. And talk about consistency. Like, for some people, your soap opera relationships could be the longest relationships you've had in your life. I've known Luke and Laura longer than I've known my husband, and that's been 38 years. And throughout periods of time in my life where I was homesick, or when I was home nursing my baby girls, or during nap time, or when I was between jobs, or just having that familiar storyline pop in my life at times where I had time to kill. The nice thing about soap operas is that you can miss long swaths of time, like maybe years, and pop back in and see familiar characters. And so aside from just the guilty pleasure of knowing the storylines and checking back in and out, I noticed that the storylines of General Hospital no longer take months and months to play out, where you used to have a storyline introduced and then you'd wait 6 months to have it resolved. And every day you'd tune in and say, but she's pregnant with his daughter, don't you know? And it would never play out. But in the last 2 years, General Hospital has resolved shows in about a week's time, or themes and topics. It's moved much more quickly, and they've become much more bold in addressing what's going on socially. Currently, they have a whole storyline talking about gentrification and about wealthy corporations moving into working class neighborhoods and taking over the working class neighborhoods and leaving the people without homes, without their businesses, and without a place to live. Now, that's a very, very culturally appropriate topic at this time. And they're talking about a stolen election, albeit a mayoral election that was stolen on the show. But they're making very clear connections between what's going on in our grander political climate and what's going on in the fictional town of General Hospital. And they're talking about encouraging the voters to step up and have their voices be heard and to not be shy and to call their congressmen. They're making actual pleas to the viewing population to stand up for their rights. They also have a whole storyline going on about opioid addiction with one of the characters who's struggling with opioid addiction. And in the conversation, in the dialogue between the characters, they're actually talking about statistics of opioid use and opioid abuse and the struggles that we're having as a culture and as a country to address opioid use. And then in the commercials, they use that time to post information of how to get more information about opioid addiction or how to get help. They also have a storyline that's been going on for a few years around bipolar disorder. one of the main characters of General Hospital, played by Maurice Bernard, actually suffers from bipolar disorder in his real life. And so he incorporated his experience struggling with bipolar disorder into his storyline as Sonny Corinthos, the mob boss with a big heart. He has brought that storyline in over the last few years to raise awareness about bipolar disorder, to normalize it, to let people know that there is help for them out there. And then recently they showed his son struggling with bipolar disorder. So all of this started coming up more quickly for me. And after listening to Oprah's speech, I started realizing that we don't pay enough attention anymore to the potential of television as a therapeutic tool, as a way to get the messages out to the masses. Whereas Marshall McLuhan said back in the day that, you know, the medium was the massage, and that we were going to be numbed to death by the vacuousness of television. The truth is that in 1961, John F. Kennedy's FCC chairman, giving you a little history lesson here, John F. Kennedy's FCC chairman, Newton Minow, declared that most television was a vast wasteland of lowbrow programming. And instead of burying television and putting it aside as being non-important to culture, this actually opened the door for networks to start making room for what they called prestige narrative series. And they started to deal with weighty social issues of the time, like the civil rights movement and Vietnam and women's rights. This statement by the FCC chairman actually emboldened networks to move the medium forward. And since then, we've seen all of the most challenging issues that face our country addressed in the media. So let me pull back to soap operas for just a moment, although I probably could talk about them for the whole hour, but I will limit it to just this part. Just for example, let's talk about Erica Kane and One Life to Live. Susan Lucci, probably one of the most famous soap opera stars of all time, she had the first legal abortion on television, not actually on television, but her storyline. Her character had an abortion in 1973. All My Children also addressed Vietnam and the loss of her boyfriend who died in combat, and talked about the impact that Vietnam was having on families. One Life to Live had the first openly lesbian couple who got married legally together. They addressed drug use. In 2015, The Bold and the Beautiful had the first transgender character. In 2016, The Guiding Light dealt with uterine cancer. In the Guiding Light also had the first African-American couple featured as leads in the show. In 2011, One Life to Live actually did a long storyline about bullying, online bullying, and how it impacts high school students. And one of the characters was driven to almost committing suicide because of the bullying that went on. And they utilized all of these storylines to educate the populace, to educate the people who may not be reading newspapers every day or listening to NPR for their news or checking into The Daily Show or one of those other news programs, PBS. You know, the majority of American adults do not watch the news or read the newspaper or get their news from NPR. For many adult Americans, primetime television is the only continuing education that's available to them to learn how to cope with contemporary issues and crises. And it can also be, you know, socially useful to help normalize for people who don't have access to academia or college courses or to other news programs. Television becomes a way to normalize uncomfortable topics and create conversations that can happen in families, for everything from gender issues to sexual orientation to drug abuse. So yes, I am a proponent of television in many ways, but never more so than at this moment, recognizing what's happening with soap operas and how they're utilizing their platform to educate people who may only get their information there, but also to see the quality of programming. There's too many great shows to even keep up with, but there are so many opportunities to watch shows that will make you feel, but also help you be a better person or to learn about how others live. And then to see the potential for television to bring forward social concerns, like taking a knee, without our football Sunday rituals, for many people who, again, don't read the paper or watch the news, they would have no understanding or realization of the movement that Colin Kaepernick has started, good or bad, however it's been seen or taken in the media. That platform of Sunday football has opened up conversations that may not have happened before. So because this is our weekly conversation and we get to come together and talk about these things that are going on, I thought today would be an interesting day to open up the phone lines and ask you, what is it you watch? If you're not too above television to admit that you watch it, I'd love to know, what is it you watch and why is it that you choose to watch what you watch? Because it's interesting how we're drawn to shows that either confirm those things we already believe, but sometimes will take us out into a fantasy world that we can only imagine possible in other ways, or we just like to laugh. We just like to laugh at the silliness of humans doing whatever it is they do. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be a part of the program by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. If you like our page, I post shows every week, and you can also send me a message that way. You're also welcome to send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you'd like to listen to previous shows, you can visit kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. All of our shows are up from the last 8 years. And if you'd like to keep up with current shows and you like to podcast, then you can visit Apple Podcasts and search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Subscribe and the shows will be uploaded to your device. And if you have a couple minutes to leave a review, that also helps so we can get more people on board listening to the show and getting a chance to subscribe. So that's the question. What is it that you watch? If you'll admit that you watch anything, and why is it that you watch it? 805-781-3875. So I guess one of the things that also struck me when I was looking at my research for how television has changed, because they said I've stepped away from the world of television for a long time. Although I continue to watch it as a consumer, I haven't studied television as an academic for a long time or really kept up with a lot of the ways that television has changed. But I did a little poking around, and I was fascinated to discover a nonprofit that is actually utilizing television as a therapeutic tool and utilizing it for good. And it's called Population Media Center. And if you're interested at all, I encourage you to look up their webpage and see the work they're doing. But the Population Media Center was founded in 1998 in Burlington, Vermont, by William Ryerson. And their goal was to use media to help achieve the stabilization of human population at a level that can be sustained by world resources. So what they do is they create shows, long-running serial dramas, soap operas, telenovelas, based on education and helping to change attitudes and behaviors related to people's health and well-being. They aim to lessen the impact of the growing number of humans on the environment by educating viewers about the benefits of small families and family planning and birth control. And they're currently in over 41 countries, from Ecuador to Rwanda to Vietnam and the U.S. So utilizing television as a therapeutic tool. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I know you're a little young to answer this question, but has anybody ever done any research on the effect that the Twilight Zone had on the 60s and 70s? And
you know, I would imagine they did, because when I was going through school, there was a lot of research being done on television, but I don't know it specifically. But I can tell you, I'm not that young. I still watch the Twilight Zone specials on New Year's. And you would imagine that it had to have a heavy hand in influencing not just the lifestyles in the 60s, right? The psychedelic lifestyles, but also the science fiction world.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was the most subversive thing on TV in that late 50s and early 60s, and I think it really made a lot of us think about the world we lived in that wasn't being touched anywhere else. And I think it may have led to the 60s rebellion, the anti-cultural rebellion.
That's a great point, and I can see exactly how it would have added to the conversation, because I think it was a show that didn't come out as a politically charged show. It was supposed to be science fiction, but the topics were very much questioning the world as we saw it, the very black and white version of the world that we saw.
Yeah.
Good point, Bill. Now I'm going to go back and watch some more.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Michelle, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michelle. Sorry. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Michelle.
So you were asking about what shows people are watching on television?
Yes, if you'll admit to watching television.
Yeah, and so what I'm watching at the moment is Designated Survivor and Madam Secretary. And the reason I'm watching them is because they show an intelligent, functioning government at the highest level. And it feels very comforting.
And so is there any particular storyline that kind of resonates with you?
Well, I just started watching the newest season of Madam Secretary, and in the first episode, she's accused of something that's very clearly a fake news story, and she kind of goes to town on fake news, and the whole episode is about that and about how to tell fake news from real news and that kind of thing, so that seems to me to be really timely.
And I like that she said it gives you comfort at this time, because I think that is part of what television should do for us, not just the nice ritual of plopping on the couch and kind of zoning out, but also feeling like we're not alone in how we're feeling or seeing the world.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for taking the time to call.
Well, one more thing.
Yes.
I'm sorry. So you were also talking about Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is okay to say on the air, so I apologize if not. But I know that there's going to be more of a conversation about that, because the NAACP is holding on February the 3rd in the Mission Plaza a Take the Knee event where we're going to discuss more of that kind of thing.
And
so
what time will that be?
Locally, to have a conversation about that will be really good.
Absolutely. And I don't think that the conversation has stopped. I think a lot of people in power would like to hope that the Take a Knee movement has gone away and will be gone with the end of football season. But no, I don't think it's the end. And what date is this?
I agree.
What date is
this? It's February the 3rd.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for letting us know.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And I brought up the topic of television as a tool for social reform and education and the opportunity to help bring people together. Do we have water cooler moments anymore where people get to work the next day and everyone wants to talk about something that happened on television the night before? And I'm curious to know what it is you watch and why you choose to watch it. What does it do for you? 805-781-3875. Hi, Heather. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for taking my call, and thanks for your wonderful show.
Thank you.
I don't even use a live TV lately, but in the past, what I've done, and I know now it's the tech thing, and I'm practicing streaming stuff now. Okay, I'm doing a little of that. But I love the historical dramas on PBS when I'm seeing them, because I really think that, you know, unless we study history, and I really – there's so much that's happening currently that pushes everything out of our young students' minds and young adults' minds. They don't know history of the world, never mind their own country. And if we can continue to make quality dramas, you know, whether it's Downton Abbey, which wasn't all about the upper class, it was about the war, the Great War, you know, and how it affected Europe and on and on and on. We have to remember the lessons of history, or we're doomed to repeat them.
It's true. And it's interesting how education has changed over the last 10, 20 years, even in the last 10 years that I've been at the university, where there is a great pressure on instructors to not just impart information, but we also are supposed to be entertaining, that we are now trying to compete for our students' attention with whatever else that they can tune into during class. And so how do we get this information, right? How do we teach history and the lessons that need to be learned and keep our students engaged? And so I think things like historical dramas are essential, because when they're formatted in a way that's entertaining, we're more apt to get people to watch. And this is incredibly lowbrow, but I don't know if you've seen the show Drunk History.
I've seen it advertised. I haven't watched it, but is it funny?
It's very, very funny, and you have to watch it because it's the acting that makes it funny, but they are addressing real historical events, and every time I watch it, I keep thinking, this is a show I could get my students to watch.
Exactly.
And then start a conversation.
And you know, I think this really, it's a broader issue, too, that's even more politically important, you know, the new FCC chairman, which is just one of Trump's appointees, that's going to reverse every kind of benefit to the nation, strictly to keep it for the 1.1% or whatever, in the net neutrality thing. When I can watch and stream any program or museum interior or whatever online, And I can see that, and I'm not going to be bumped, and my speed is going to be as fast as it should be, so that I don't lose the signal, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're working right now to reverse that students and schools and educators and nonprofits don't have the access to this type of thing. I really think there's room for a show on net neutrality, and this should be the next you know, politically motivated action, because it's when education and information is denied to the people, that's when fascism will take over. It's close enough now, which is pathetic, but, you know.
And I appreciate your passion, Heather, and I hear it in your voice, because I think that's what inspired a lot of this show for me today, was to that feeling that here was Oprah Winfrey speaking her mind freely, and that we could have that taken away from us at any time, and that we have to be vigilant.
Right.
And if we're utilizing television for the good, because they are public airwaves, that is still the truth, then we need to hang on to it. So thank you for that reminder, and I'm sure it's not the last conversation we'll have about net neutrality as well. Thanks
terrific.
For calling, Heather.
Thank you again.
And it's interesting, because I brought up the quote from Newton Minow, who was the FCC chairman in 1961, because of what's happening with the FCC today, how different things are. You know, in 1961, Newton Minow was trying to encourage the use of public airways in a way that would educate and enlighten the American public. And here we are in 2018, and we are seeing a push to remove access to enrichment and education. And what are we going to do about that? Are we going to be reduced to only being able to see rerun episodes of the Andy Griffith Show? You know, are we going to lose access to streaming of shows like Handmaid's Tale, shows that are politically and socially important? I don't know. Do you worry about that? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And Kelly, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hello. I wanted to share what I've been watching and a little bit about my experience with television.
Okay.
I just started watching Grey's Anatomy. I'm a little bit behind the ball, but I think that it's not necessarily about using TV as an educational tool, but I go to university, and I find that there's a whole sort of cultural thing among college students about binge watching TV shows and how it's really just a stress relief right now. We'll work really hard and take exams and go to classes, and then we'll sit and watch 8 hours, 6 hours of TV shows, and we have to have something to dive into and hide in, or else we get stressed. And I speak for myself, and I know many of my friends definitely have the same experience with it.
So you don't feel that Grey's Anatomy or Scandal are bettering you in any way as a human, but mostly it's just the escapism piece of it? Or do you find that there's value in the programming?
I definitely think that it's interesting to watch other people's experiences with certain situations and scenarios. And Grey's Anatomy, I'm learning a ton about surgery, but especially with some of those sort of amplified drama TV shows, I feel like I'd go to them just to get away and to escape, and that it's a really important stress relief tool. I would be really bummed if I didn't have something to dive into at the end of the day. But that being said, shows like Scandal, which are based on, you know, politics and the government, how the government functions, definitely offer some insight into current events and how they're being handled.
And also Scandal, when I was doing research, they actually had their lead character had an abortion at the finale of 2015 that was really reignited that conversation in culture, because that hadn't happened since Maude in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And so do you find in your age group, are there any water cooler moments? Like, are there things you talk about as a generation, television shows or things you view that's, you know, I would imagine like Game of Thrones for some people, but is there is there something that your group talks about from your perspective?
Well, I hate to say it, but definitely something that brings a lot of us together. This is embarrassing. I'm being bold here.
Okay.
But The Bachelor and Bachelorette, they bring people together, huge groups. The only time I would see groups of friends once a week, we all come together to watch that. And that's sort of a silly thing. But that is our, if we're talking about something that has everyone come together and chatting about it, that's one of them. And that's college age looking for something that's not too thought-provoking.
I don't think it's just college age, though, because my engineer, Carol, is thumbs up in the studio when you said bachelor. And there is a social phenomenon to bachelor, bachelorette. I mean, you're right.
Ridiculous.
It's not just college students. It kind of crosses all age groups, and it gives people a starting point for a conversation. And then as a therapist, I hope the conversation leads to what would be appropriate mating and dating practices be.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely like watching a train wreck a lot of times, but it's pretty fun to then follow afterwards and give something to talk about with lots and lots of people who I wouldn't necessarily chat with.
It gives that common ground, that place to start a conversation. I think ultimately that's what I'm looking for, is how do we utilize television as a way to connect people and open up conversations between parents and their children, or college students who might not ever speak to each other because they can just look at their phone all day, or people who feel a little disenfranchised or alienated from society. They can be in on the conversation because there is this common space. Thanks for calling.
I think This Is Us is doing that right now, too, which is good.
Oh, yes, This Is
Us.
That's
all I've got.
That is my Sit for a Good Cry show. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for taking the time to call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we're talking about the influence of television in society today, that it still has an important place. It is making a difference for many families, for many people, the majority of people who don't get their news from NPR or from the newspaper or from engaging in PBS or other news outlets, that they're getting most of their information about what goes on socially in society and in history from what they see in television. And one of the shows that is doing it the best these days, if you haven't seen it yet, this is from my perspective, is a show called Black-ish. And Black-ish has taken on issues from the onset that made me uncomfortable, and yet I was still laughing, and yet I wondered, should I be laughing? And going right from the heart of conversations that people have behind closed doors and putting it out into the open. And one of the most powerful shows that they had was the opening of this season. They did a full musical talking about Juneteenth, and they did it in kind of Hamilton fashion. And at first I thought, I'm not going to watch a half-hour musical, Black-ish, but they haven't disappointed me yet. So I tuned in, and I wanted to play for you just one of the songs from the Juneteenth episode of Black-ish to get an idea of the quality of television that's still available today. A little bit from Black-ish.
Freedom, yeah, no saving no more, no listen to massa, the battle rifles. Freedom, yeah, no saving no more, no listen to massa, the battle rifles. Freedom.
I'm talking about Juneteenth. It was the 20th, but the 19th when it was told to us.
It's time to vote for me to take part in this democracy.
Tell them freedom papers up, please, because we don't need to show ID.
It's June 19th, we celebrate.
Grab a blonde and miscegenate.
Ooh, ain't that something?
I can finally whistle at a white woman.
I'ma start a business.
I'ma get a loan.
I'ma move to the burbs and buy me a home.
I'ma take a vacation and when I'm gone,
they won't burn crosses on my lawn.
I can sit at the counter all day long.
And I won't get sprayed with a fire hose.
When I get reparations, I'ma act a fool.
Plant my 40 acres and go strike the mule.
My 40 acres and a mule.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that was a little bit from the show Blackish and their show about Juneteenth that started off their season this year. But they've also addressed issues, gender, race relations, and just last week they talked about diabetes, which impacts the lives of African Americans at higher rates than other individuals. And so there are great things happening on television. This is considered the platinum age. We had the golden age, but we really are at a time where there are more stellar television shows available than ever before. And what's interesting is that we still pay more attention to what happened in the 70s with Norman Lear, who is considered the pioneer in weaving real-world social concerns and conversations into the dialogue of his sitcoms, you know, like All in the Family and Maude and Good Times, which address things like misogyny and homophobia and social issues. But it's been a long time since the 70s, and there was a drought of television that wasn't really uplifting. But this is a period of time where if we're talking about social change, we're talking about the need to have conversations and to get people connecting to each other. This is a way we can get there. So I pose the question, what is it you're watching these days? If you'll admit to watching anything, what is it you're watching and what does it do for you? Why? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. And Marilee, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Hi. I've always loved television. So
thank you.
grew up in the 40s when they were showing old movies on television. And just always loved TV and old movies. But I guess my comment, actually kind of interesting, is you being a therapist, too, is Survivor. I've always watched Survivor off and on. But in the 80s, I was in therapy, and I was also kind of San Francisco New Age and was going to Esalen. Mm. Couple of weekends at Esalen, and they had a game in one of the therapy sessions, the weekends at Esalen, which was like Survivor, where your group of people that you were with in that therapy session, people who didn't really know you, but maybe had, you know, 2 days maybe of experience of therapy with you, and then they would sit around and with their perception of who you were would vote you either off or on the to stay on the island.
Well, it was a precursor to the reality show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what did that do for people or when they were voted in or out?
Well, sometimes it was hurtful because you thought, well, these people really don't know me. Know that I would be a benefit if I were kept on the island. But it was also interesting as then when it would become my turn to have to vote somebody to say, yes, if I were on a deserted island, I would keep you or I would not keep you. It just made you realize in a way that how we judge each other on maybe superficial impressions. Although on the game show now, on the TV show, you get to certainly know somebody much more in depth. Mm-hmm. And also you're competing for $1 million. So,
well, and I will admit, and it sounds like I do spend all of my spare time watching television, which I don't, but I do also watch Survivor. I can, you know, scan through because it is, the show is definitely an interesting take on social relationships.
Yes.
And how
yeah.
people either come together as a group or they split apart. I think there's a lot of how the bonding of the individuals on the show and then how there's the treason and treachery. And sometimes
yeah.
I worry that it because it's an edited show, they
yeah.
make it look like everyone is a villain in some way. And I
know,
wonder,
it's rehearsed.
Yeah, and I wonder sometimes now if it is not, because I think there's some fun in it, but I worry sometimes because we're in such a divisive point in history that
yeah.
we don't need to see groups of people coming together and learning to mistrust each other.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
That'd be yeah, healthier to see how we're building
yeah.
connections. And
yeah.
then you had also on your when you called in and mentioned the Vietnam War series, because that was something else I was going to bring up as being
yes.
A cultural you know, bringing together culture. So many people watch this series and want to talk about the history
yeah.
of Vietnam War.
Yeah, I think, well, I hope I'm not going to cry here, but I grew up, I mean, I was a young professional just out of college in the 60s when a lot of friends of mine were going into the Vietnam War, and some as an artist. I know some were going to France. But I must admit, at that time, I didn't know a lot, and maybe this was true of a lot of people then, which after watching the series, I felt like in the 60s, I really didn't know mm-hmm. what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I trusted the government. No, I remember some of my friends were going to rallies or sit-ins and things, and I thought, oh, well, surely they wouldn't get us in a war. They must know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then later, you know, as I knew more, became more, then was against the war. I think the series and friends of mine that I still have, and we were talking about the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. about how we were living through that period and we were just starting our careers as young professionals, but how much we really didn't know what was going on about, you know, what the government was telling us and how much we, you know, actually lived through that period. But after seeing Ken's Burns show, which was so excellent, and the interviews with all the different men on both sides of the war, how really learned about, although I was living through that period in history, I did not know what was going on.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that, Marilee, because I think that's the experience that a lot of people are having right now, that although there's a sense that things are not going well, it's
right.
probably not going to be until there's a mini series done on this 15 years from now, and our children will look at us and say, how could you not know? And they'll say, because we were so confused and there was so much misinformation. So having things like the Vietnam War, and I remember the very first, you know, mini series was Roots, and how that opened up so many conversations for people who'd never had any idea of what was happening and still don't know. But that was the first time I remember being engaged in another world that I had no understanding of. So, Marilee, thank you for
the most important, early series.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in, Marilee. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about the platinum age of television and how do we utilize television as a therapeutic tool. There are many things that television can do for us. It can uplift us. It can help us feel calm. It can help us get a good laugh, a good cry. It can be an education on many levels. So are you watching television? And what is it that you're watching and why? And I think about, you know, those seminal moments of television throughout the years. One of the ones that always stands out for me is 1984's The Burning Bed with Farrah Fawcett, if you remember that show, if you were around in those days. But she was a woman who was being abused, domestic violence. And after that show was so graphic and so violent and so upsetting and so overwhelming, what was interesting is that within 24 hours of that show airing, the public outcry for more social service agencies and law enforcement to do something overwhelmed phone banks and cities, and it started changing some of the domestic violence laws. So the impact of television can never be understated. And of course, West Wing, which was the ideal of what we would hope an American presidency could be for many people, and how our country could actually work together. And I know a lot of people are longing for and missing the times and the dialogues of West Wing. And I came across just a short snippet. It's not even Martin Sheen, actually. It's Alan Alda, who was on the very last season, talking about the political climate. And it just reminded me of how important television can be in engaging our minds in what happens in the world outside of television, how we need to stay vigilant and engaged. Let's listen to Alan Alda from West Wing.
Reached an agreement on the debt ceiling bill. We will pass it within the hour and send it to the president for his signature before midnight.
What about the minimum wage amendment?
We've agreed to have a separate vote on the minimum wage increase tomorrow.
Is it going
to
pass?
Yes, it will. I'll vote for it, and I guarantee you it'll be more than enough bipartisan support to pass it.
Senator, are you going to reconsider Reverend Butler's invitation to his church this weekend?
I fully respect Reverend Butler's position. I mean, I appreciate his invitation. And, look, I respect Reverend Butler. And I respect his church too much to use it for my own political purposes. And that's exactly what I'd be doing if I went down there this Sunday. Because the truth is, it would just be an act of political phoniness. I may be wrong, but I suspect our churches already have enough political phonies in them.
Senator, do you or do you not?
I don't see how we can have a separation of church and state in this government. If you have to pass a religious test to get in this government. And I want to warn everyone in the press and all the voters out there. If you demand expressions of religious faith from politicians, you are just begging to be lied to. They won't all lie to you, but a lot of them will. And it'll be the easiest lie they ever had to tell to get your votes. So every day until the end of this campaign, I'll answer any question anyone has on government. But if you have a question on religion, please go to church. Thank you.
Senator Finnick.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And we're talking about television and its place in society. And, you know, I was really moved Sunday night listening to Oprah Winfrey's speech at the Golden Globes, kind of igniting a movement and her impassioned plea for people to stand up and take action. And I thought, wow, I've forgotten how forceful television can be. And it got me thinking about how much television today is doing good work. And I mentioned my guilty pleasure of General Hospital and how soap operas have changed over the last 50 years. They have always been a bastion of social change and advocacy, bringing up topics that weren't even being discussed in the news media, but willing to take it on in soap operas. But the soap operas of today are moving much more quickly. They're moving through stories more quickly, and they're talking about things like opiate abuse and bipolar disorder, mental health concerns, cancer screening. They're putting out information for people to call and get help if they relate to one of the shows that they're seeing. Because remember, television is still the primary education source for most Americans. And so to utilize television in a way that is educational is still revolutionary and still important. So I was wondering what it is that you watch and why it's important to you. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. And Susan, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm very moved and inspired to see television programs like The Healer come to TV. This is about a man who's a hands-on healer, and he's very humble. You know, he doesn't claim he can heal everyone. Lots of things have to line up for that to happen. But, you know, it's very well played, you know, very well treated. It's a reality show. I'm very inspired to see that kind of a show get financed and get airtime. It's great.
Is it on the big networks or is it on a streaming network?
No, it's on basic cable, though. I'm thinking it could be on National Geographic or TLC, the Learning Channel, something like that. But yeah, it's called The Healer, and it's a guy from Australia doing hands-on healing. So it's very cool.
So when you choose to watch something, spend your time watching, what is it that you're looking for in programming or a show? What is it going to take to draw you in?
When I have a long day and I'm tired, I often say to my partner, let's have some brainless TV.
And what is that?
It serves different aspects. You know, The Healer isn't a brainless show. Mm-hmm. But I do like to watch it, you know, just as entertainment and escape and to not do heavy thinking all the time, which is most of what I'm doing. So it's an escape, but it's also, for me, an education. It's a window on other lives and lifestyles. I enjoy the shows about Alaska, several different shows where people, you know, where people live on their own and hunt for their own food and, you know, are subsistence livers, you know, not off the grid and so forth. So I enjoy seeing other lifestyles. So for me, it's educational, it's inspirational, and it's also escape.
Well said. Thank you, Susan. Thanks for taking the time to call in and all to check out The Healer.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we've been talking about television as a therapeutic tool, as an education tool. And one of the things that really gives me hope moving forward are the ways that nonprofits are utilizing television to try to educate those who don't have access to academia or to college courses or to newspapers. But this group called Population Media Center, and you can find them easily online. And they're utilizing television to promote gender equality and improve the quality of life for women and girls by slowing population growth and helping women to take control of family planning and utilize birth control. They also tell a lot of conservation stories. And so Population Media Center is creating long-running serial dramas for radio and TV and the web that engages their audience with authentic characters and culturally appropriate challenges and opportunities. And so they're using entertainment as education to address health and human rights and environmental and economic issues. So for someone who loves television, who grew up loving television, and I guess I must have some sort of a degree that utilizes television, I am happy to see this tool being used for good. So I hope you'll take some time to tune in and share it with your family, share it with your friends, talk about it, start those water cooler conversations, because those are the things that are going to connect us. And you can be part of this conversation after the show by checking out our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. Go to our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or check out previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. You can also podcast our shows through Apple Podcasts. As always, I appreciate you being a part of the conversation, and I look forward to continuing our conversation next week. And I leave you with a little something to shake up your day.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lights of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.